Welcome to VOA's International Edition. I'm Susan Yawkey in Washington. Coming up, the world is watching as voters cast ballots on EU membership in Britain. An unusual demonstration is taking place in the U.S. Congress. Audiences are being delighted in a small U.S. puppet theater.
There's colors everywhere. I call it a kaleidoscope of colors of puppets and props. And there's noisemakers and things in there for some kids to play with before and after the show.
And a look at the new movie about a big friendly giant. It's all on today's International Edition. Voters went to the polls today in Britain's historic election to decide whether the country remains in or leaves the European Union. Correspondent Luis Ramirez is in London observing the balloting and joins us on the line. Welcome, Luis.
Hi, Susan.
This is a controversial issue, and we've seen a murder of one member of parliament leading up to the balloting. Is the vote going fairly smoothly today?
Yes. Despite pouring rain, London had some really incredible downpours on Thursday morning. That did not stop people from going to the polls all day long. A pretty steady stream of voters lining up to cast their ballots at a couple of polling stations that I went to. So there is a great deal of enthusiasm, a great deal of passion for this in this referendum.
And perhaps you'll refresh our memories about what are the arguments for and against leaving the EU?
The chief issues that voters are talking about are immigration, economy, and sovereignty. And so it's a very passionate debate. The argument from the Remain camp is that staying in the European Union will make Britain richer and safer. The pro-exit people argue that that Britain has lost control of its borders and say it's time to stop this overreach by Brussels and take back control not only of borders but also of regulations and other things that govern daily life for people in Britain.
And today's vote in England could affect nations all around the world.
And we're seeing that because, on the news that polls leading into this election are showing a slight lead for the Remain camp. The British pound and stock markets rallied Thursday morning in trading in Europe. And so that's a sign that investors are betting that the country will decide to stay as a member of the 28-member bloc, and that there will be, if voters decide to stay, that there will be no disruptions, as had been predicted if they decided to opt out.
Well, thank you, Luis, for speaking with us today from London.
Good to be with you.
I'm joined here in the studio by social media reporter Andrew Palchevsky, who has been looking online to see what is being said about the big vote in England today. Hi there, Andrew.
Hi, good to be with you.
Thank you. Tell me what they're saying.
Well, we're seeing hashtag EUREF, hashtag I voted, hashtag Brexit or not, hashtag just hashtag Brexit. All this conversation about the vote, people going back and forth, sharing their positions, sharing maybe some of the celebrities who have come out on either side of the issue, and just a lot of people monitoring this vote on social media and kind of stepping back as an observer and just looking at this debate, looking at as the results start to trickle in later today, and how this might impact not just the UK and the EU, but the world. Hashtag EUREF is very interesting. Twitter puts a little emoji, a little kind of a ballot with an X on it next to hashtag EUREF. And they do this sometimes when there are very significant hashtags around big news events or big sporting events. So this is, kind of shows the significance of this, certainly on social media and then in the news generally.
I saw something interesting, too, in that people are sending out pictures of different things at polling stations, and one of them is about dogs. People are taking their dogs to the polling station.
The animals have played a huge part in this Brexit vote. So we have the dogs, hashtag mutts for Remain. That was something that a lot of people were posting pictures of their dogs. But even before that, it kind of started with this hashtag cats against Brexit, and people posting pictures of their cats saying, we want to stay in the EU. On the other side, they started a hashtag. They said, cats for Brexit. So you had the back and forth where people posting these cat images, people saying, oh, it's kind of silly, but it is drawing a lot of people's attention, and it may be drawing attention to people who wouldn't be interested otherwise. So it is getting a lot of people into the vote that might not be interested.
Also trending today is the sit-in on Capitol Hill by members of Congress.
Yes, hashtag Democratic sit-in. These are Democratic members of Congress who are staging a sit-in. They literally are sitting on the floor of the House of Representatives to try to get this gun bill passed, this gun control bill that would block people who are on terror watch lists from being able to buy guns. So there's been a lot of back and forth on this issue. It's a contentious one, but more interesting is how it's playing out on social media and kind of the mediums that they're using. We have John Lewis, who is a congressman who marched in Selma and marched for civil rights 50 years ago, and he's on Periscope and Facebook Live. And so it's amazing to see the civil rights icon using these new technologies and kind of taking his protest and his activism into the 21st century. So we're seeing his live streams. C-SPAN, which shows the live feeds of the U.S. House and Senate, they actually picked up and were airing some of those Facebook Live videos as live feeds. So you're seeing through those congressmen and congresswomen's eyes what they're experiencing when they're sitting on the House floor.
Okay, well, thank you so much, Andrew.
Thank you.
In the news, a U.S. Supreme Court deadlock thwarts Obama immigration plan. British voters are casting ballots in a historic EU referendum. U.S. House Democrats hold a marathon sit-in to demand gun reform. Iraqi forces backed by the U.S. coalition move toward the crucial Al-Qayyara airfield south of Mosul. News, feature reports, and more are at voanews.com. This is VOA.
This is Science in a Minute.
Scientists say that in the known universe, about 90% of the biggest black holes are dormant, which means they aren't ravenously devouring matter. Because they're dormant, these black holes aren't pumping out radiation or any kind of light. But all it takes is for a star or some other object to amble close by to awaken it and kickstart a feeding frenzy, which scientists call a tidal disruption. Astronomers at the University of Maryland, for the first time, found signs of a tidal disruption after observing X-rays bouncing off the walls of an accretion disk, the gathering of matter around the black hole that forms as it devours material. The scientists say this black hole consumed material so fast that it even briefly surpassed the Eddington limit, which is the theoretical maximum speed of how fast a black hole can actually ingest matter. The UMD team says their finding can help astronomers understand how supermassive black holes grow. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
There is a very unusual thing happening on Capitol Hill here in Washington. Members of the House of Representatives are staging a sit-in on the floor of Congress, even though the body is officially recessed for the July 4th national holiday. Congressional correspondent Catherine Gibson is following the action, and she joins us on the line. Hi, Catherine.
Hello.
Hi. Please describe for us the scene on the floor of Congress.
Well, we still have multiple members of Congress on the House floor taking turns talking about this call for gun control legislation, even though the House has been adjourned since very early this morning. So they are keeping up this sit-in. They're still broadcasting live on Periscope, because all of the House cameras have been turned off at the direction of the leadership. And they're saying that they're not going anywhere, that they're keeping this up.
What do the Democrats hope to achieve?
They want to bring up a series of bills that are similar to what's been brought up in the Senate, something called a no-fly, no-buy, which would prevent people on the terror watch list from purchasing guns. They're also for enhanced background checks. But I was just in a press conference with Speaker Ryan, and he said that this is absolutely not going to happen, that there is rules, there are order, and that they've already tried to bring this up in a committee and failed. And that's the Democratic process, and that's how it's going to work.
He's called this a publicity stunt.
Oh, yes. And he also, in the press conference just now, held up a series of fundraising emails, and he said that Democrats are looking for a way to make money off of the Orlando shooting tragedy, and that that's what this sit-in is really about.
Well, you've stepped outside of the building, and you tell me there's yet another demonstration out there. There was quite a ruckus
right.
Yesterday, and what's going on today, and what happened yesterday?
Right. So yesterday, around 7, 8 o'clock at night, as the sit-in was reaching its 8th or 9th hour, we had a couple of hundred people out here. Right now, I'm seeing maybe 100. It looks like the crowd is probably growing. It's everybody just protesting, saying that they support these members of Congress, and they want to come out here and show their support.
Is there anybody opposed to what the members of Congress are doing?
I haven't seen that yet. I did not see that last night, and I do not see that yet now.
Well, this is a very unusual thing.
It's been an extraordinary 24 hours to see members of Congress literally sitting on the floor of the House, to hear all of them chanting down the speaker as he tried to call for a voice vote late last night, and then to see all of these people coming out in support around the Capitol. It's been an amazing day here on Capitol Hill.
Sounds like a bit of a circus.
Oh, most definitely. That's for sure. I mean, we've had people singing "We Shall Overcome" on the House floor. We've had chanting back and forth. It's been unique.
How long are they promising to sit there on the floor of the Congress?
There's been some speculation that they're trying to bring it to the 24-hour mark, which would be right at about 11:30. And the House has adjourned at this point for the July 4th holiday. There's, at this point, very little that can be done. They can't bring up any legislation. They can just continue sitting on the House floor.
And what has happened on the Senate side concerning gun legislation?
Well, we have the vote that came up last week following the 15-hour filibuster from Senator Murphy from Connecticut, who has been a passionate advocate for gun control legislation. Because of that filibuster, the vote came up. That, of course, failed on the Senate side. And that's one of the reasons here on the House side that Speaker Ryan is saying, look, even if we bring this up for a vote in the House, it's already failed in the Senate. We know that we can't get this through, so there's no reason to push this through again.
I think I can hear some of those demonstrators in the background.
That's right. Okay. That's right. That's them cheering.
Thank you so much, Catherine, for speaking to us today from Capitol Hill.
You're welcome.
Coming up on International Edition, puppets bringing smiles to the young and old, and a preview of a new young-hearted film.
Theaters are popular in some parts of the world, but in the United States, there are only about 40 of them. One of those is in the small town of Martinsburg, West Virginia, where elementary school art teacher Joe Santoro has opened a tiny house for shows to kids young and old. Reporter Deborah Block went on a field trip to visit, and she joins us now on the line. Welcome back, Deborah.
Thank you very much, Susan.
Please describe this theater for us.
Oh, it's wonderful. In fact, it's called the Wonderment Puppet Theater. And it's located, as you said, in a house. It's on the main street of Martinsburg, West Virginia, a small town. And the outside of it is colorful. I mean, you can't miss it when you're on the main street. And then when you go inside, it's just delightful. First of all, there's, again, colors everywhere. I call it a kaleidoscope of colors of puppets and props. And there's noisemakers and things in there for some kids to play with before and after the show. And then there's a small set there, and in this case, Joe Santoro was performing a fairy tale called The Frog Prince. So there was a princess involved, and we all know that princesses, for the most part anyway, live in castles. So there's this lovely castle that he has created. He creates all the puppets and the props, and he is also the sole puppeteer. So he is controlling all the puppets and the sound, and he has lighting that he controls. And it's just a really, really fun time where kids and their parents are spread out on the floor and just watching this half-hour performance of The Frog Prince, which is just a lot of fun and sometimes silly.
Where does he find his storylines?
Well, he actually creates them himself. He combines traditional fairy tales, and then he puts his own spin on them. And Joe has a great sense of humor, and he knows that kids love things that are funny and silly. So he changes them to have a funny or silly storyline. And then he just kind of goes with it. And so when you're watching the performance, rather than see a real traditional fairy tale that you can figure out, there's always going to be some sidelines there that are just a fun to watch.
And his puppets, I take it he fashions them himself?
You know, he does. He's got, he says, over 100 puppets, and he's got a small workroom upstairs in this house. And I watched him put together one of the puppets, and he uses anything he can find. He says to me, you know, anybody can make a puppet. It doesn't have to be expensive, and you can use what you have around the house or what you can find at a craft store, like styrofoam and fabric, glitter, sequins. And then he uses paint to paint the designs on the puppet, and he puts it all together, all the pieces, using a lot of hot glue. He doesn't use any stitching at all. And mostly what he says is he just uses his imagination to put together the people and animals that are in his shows.
I imagine the reaction is electric.
It really is, and it's not just from the kids. You know, a lot of the younger parents did not grow up with puppet shows, so this is their first time seeing one, as well as their kids. And so the kids and the parents are just sitting there giggling. They're really enthralled with their performance. And I must admit, you know, as a reporter, you know, I'm actually covering the story, and I'm, you know, I also do my own shooting, so I'm videotaping it. And even though I was working, I found myself getting involved in the storyline and laughing. I mean, Joe just has an infectious personality, and he just puts together shows that really anybody can enjoy.
Well, if folks want to see your video, they can go to our website, voanews.com, and give it a click. Thank you so much, Deborah, for speaking with us today. I'm glad you had a fun time.
I really did. It was one of the most fun assignments I've had.
This is VOA.
From science and technology, here's what's new.
The citrus industry in the United States is under attack. An invasive insect called the Asian citrus psyllid has been decimating the citrus groves of California and Florida. But University of Granada professor Javier Albert-Tercedor says there is hope with a new technology that lets scientists study the insect with what are called microtomography scans. Hundreds of X-ray photos are compiled by the scanner software to produce 360-degree 3D images.
We can travel inside the basin. We are looking at in a way that no one could imagine before.
Albert-Tercedor says the bacteria infect citrus plant leaves, causing them to wither, eventually killing the tree. But with this new imaging technology, scientists hope to find the weak links in the insect's biology that could lead to a way for farmers to fight it. For VOA's What's New, I'm Todd Grossons.
Oscar winners Steven Spielberg and Mark Rylance team up again for a new film adaptation of the BFG. International Edition's David Byrd tells us the film features Rylance as the title character and takes Spielberg back to the kind of fantasy story that started his career.
It was the witching hour when the boogeyman comes out. The girls say the witching hour arrives at midnight. I think it comes at 3 in the morning, when I'm the only one left awake, like now.
Sophie is a young girl who lives in a London orphanage run by Mrs. Clonkers, who is described as cruel to her charges. One night, Sophie sees a huge cloaked person blowing something through a trumpet-like instrument into the windows of a nearby house. That turns out to be the big friendly giant. The 8-meter-tall giant has huge ears, superhuman hearing, and is very fast. He tells Sophie his job is to collect and distribute good dreams to children. But he has to take Sophie with him to giant country, so his presence will remain a secret. Mark Rylance, who won an Oscar for his role as a Russian spy in The Bridge of Spies, performed the role using motion capture. But he says he was inspired by his pet Jack Russell Terrier's mannerisms when it came to portraying the giant.
I do look to my dog. I have a lovely little Jack Russell called Apache. His ears are very expressive. You know, when he's happy, his ears go right back, and his head's like a torpedo. And then when he's alert and frightened, his ears come forward, and he's very expressive with his ears. And when he runs, they're droopy like this. They flop up and down.
Not all giants in giant country are friendly. The BFG has to hide Sophie from the flesh-eating occupants of the land, including the flesh lump eater, the bone cruncher, and the blood bottler, played by Saturday Night Live alum Bill Hader. After traveling to London, Sophie and the BFG must convince Queen Victoria to help them get rid of all the bad giants once and for all. For director Steven Spielberg, the premiere in Los Angeles was bittersweet. His script writer and collaborator on the BFG and the Oscar-winning E.T., the extraterrestrial, Melissa Matheson, died last November.
Well, it's bittersweet. Number one, I don't have Melissa with me. She passed, and she wrote the script, and she was a brilliant friend of mine, wrote E.T. in 1981, and we made it in 82, and it came out in 82. You know, I'm missing her very much, not standing here. So it's bittersweet also that I actually had such a joyful time telling the story.
Spielberg said that he will also have a tough time letting go of this project after working with such a creative cast.
The fact that it's coming to an end and it's no longer our film, it'll be all of your film, it'll belong to you in a couple of weeks. That's always sad when you really love the movie and love the work and then it's suddenly no longer yours. It's like Sophie being an orphan at the beginning of this movie. We're all going to be orphaned by the audience coming in and making this belong to them, which is absolutely our intention.
The BFG premiered at the Cannes Film Festival and has received largely positive reviews. The film is rated PG for action and peril, some brief scary moments, and some rude humor. It opens in U.S. theaters July 1st. In Washington, I'm David Byrd.
We would like to invite you to follow us on Twitter. You can find us at VOA_IE. If you would like to listen to today's program again or any previous broadcast, please visit our website at voanews.com. Go to the Programs tab in the upper right-hand corner, then scroll on down to International Edition. Thanks for joining us.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
It's been nearly half a year since the implementation of the nuclear deal between Iran, the EU, and the P5 plus one countries, the JCPOA. U.S. officials have said that so far, Iran has fully lived up to its commitments under the deal. And so has the United States, said Secretary of State John Kerry.
We have lifted the sanctions we said we would lift. And we have completely kept faith with both the black and white print as well as the spirit of this effort. In fact, I have personally gone beyond the absolute requirements of the lifting of sanctions to personally engage with banks and businesses and others who had a natural reluctance after several years of sanctions to move without fully understanding what they are allowed to do and what they aren't allowed to do.
Earlier this month, Iranian Foreign Minister Mohammad Javad Zarif said that psychological remnants from the nuclear-related sanctions in place before the implementation of the JCPOA were still having a deterrent effect on business and that Washington must do more to negate that effect. State Department spokesperson John Kirby reiterated that the United States is not and will not stand in the way of legitimate business with Iran.
What might help lift some of the psychological remnants, to use that phrase, would be Iran's ceasing the destabilizing activities that they continue to carry out. What makes business nervous, what makes business reticent, isn't some lack of education or effort by the United States, but when they see missiles being shipped to Hezbollah and support to terrorist groups. That's what makes business nervous.
Secretary of State Kerry said the United States has been very clear with Iranian officials that there are limits to what the United States can do in encouraging business to engage with Iran. But the United States will give confidence and clarification where they are needed. If we're going to have future dealings, or we want a reputation for good faith in the negotiations we conduct anywhere, it's important for us to show good faith in executing this agreement, said Mr. Kerry. And I intend to see to it that we do that.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.